Many people, perhaps most around the world, never have a chance to share a meal at a table with their family. I've been lucky to have 4 dinner tables in my life. My first table was with my mom and dad. My sister Sharon joined us in 1950, and Jackie arrived in 1954. The table had a formica top with a leaf that you could add for company. What I remember most about the experience is we all ate together. While that wasn't always possible because of my father's long work hours, the kids and mom were always at the dinner table together. Dad was there most of the time. He made up for lost dinners by making breakfast on the weekends for everyone. We had an undocumented seating chart. I sat next to the wall and Sharon sat to my left. Mom sat directly across from me. Jackie's high chair, and eventually regular chair, was to the right of Mom's. Dad sat at the end between Sharon and Jackie. My Grandma Tebow joined us for a couple of years after Grandpa Tebow passed. The chart was rearranged during those years, but the process of sharing time remained the same. I don't remember what we talked about, but I know we talked. We had a set of finger puppets that Dad often brought out to speak with the girls after we finished eating. The puppets whistled rather than spoke, but everyone knew what they were saying. It was a high-pitched through-the-teeth whistle with great expression. The puppets offered advice, often asked questions, and frequently reminded Sharon to finish her dinner. I very distinctly remember, and I'm not proud of this, one conversation that went awry for me. I had a habit of saying tuck rocks to my sister Sharon whenever she would start complaining about everything. I may have offered the 2 words even when she wasn't complaining. I was the cool older brother, and she needed my words of wisdom. I was about 11 when I switched it up a bit and threw out this to her at the dinner table. I said, "Tough titty," said the kitty, "but the milk's still good." And Mom said, "Where'd you hear that?" And I replied, "I don't know." And then she said, "Don't ever do that again." So I didn't. My second chair table was in college. Gary, Jim, and I lived in apartments for the final 2 years of our college education. An assortment of guys joined us to complete the foursome and share the rent, but the 3 of us were constant amigos. The summer between our second and third years of college, we met to discuss a plan to move out of the dorm and into an apartment. We decided to kick in $15 a week to purchase food, cleaning supplies, things like that. Jim became our cook, Gary did the dishes, and I cleaned the place. As chief cook, the shopping duties and meal scheduling fell upon Jim. We offered our input to the meal schedule, but Jim took on the major duties. Pot pies and BLTs were on the menu every week. You could have any flavor of pie you wished, and we always had 2 each. We were growing boys. The BLTs were not your mama's BLTs. They were Jim's. He felt his mother had scrimped on the bacon when she made BLTs for his family. The bacon was piled high on Jim's. And they were delicious. Our dinner conversation focused on our classes, career choices, current events, upcoming parties and girls, but mostly parties and girls. My third table has been shared with Ruth in 2 distinct phases, with children and without. While the shape and the size of our table has changed through the years, its purpose has always remained the same. It's the place where we planned our future, lived in the present, and reminisced our past. We laughed and cried on several occasions. Our very first table was ash and an antique when we bought it. We shared it for 44 years until we decided to ship it to Flagstaff, Arizona, where Sutton and Elizabeth share it today. We've stopped in several times to visit the 3 of them. And we look forward to our next visit. I expect that there experiencing similar happy and sad times. Ruth and I are fortunate to have two tables in our life. One remains in Michigan, where we raised three children. David had a lone seat at the table for the first 2 years of his life. Michael had a lone seat as well, but his was held after David and Elizabeth went off to college, where I expect they ate pies and BLTs with their new friends. Michael moved on a year later to share similar meals with his roommates. Elizabeth never had a lone seat, but that might be the subconscious reason we shipped that ass table to Arizona. Another table is housed in Florida. We're experiencing new things with new people. It's our refuge to avoid the cold of Michigan winters, and more importantly, Michigan snows. No matter where Ruth and I sit today to share our dinner, we always look forward to our children and their families sitting with us. When David, Elizabeth, and Michael were young, we always did our best to have dinner together. This table was the busiest, with two working parents and three kids participating in a variety of school activities. This was sometimes a challenge. We made it work because it was important. We had a lot of what-if conversations at our table. Ruth or I would throw out a conversation starter like, "What would you do if a stranger approached you at the bus stop?" And the discussion would progress from that point. "What would you do if one of your friends came to school without his lunch?" is another example. We discussed a vast array of topics with a variety of voice inflections. The most important thing about these discussions were they were inclusive. Everyone participated. We shared our time and thoughts with each other. We did what we did because we were a family. And this was an important part of being together. We learned with and from each other. Some of our conversations took surprising turns, not for the kids, but for Ruth and me. I remember after more than one such dinner conversation, we retreat to another part of the house and ask, "Do you believe what we just talked about?" I wouldn't talk to my parents about this, even today. Wow. I still have tables in Michigan and Florida. They aren't the same as I had when I originally wrote this tale. Ruth was always on the lookout for something new, even if it was just new for the two of us. We were in a constant state of revision. New looks and new feels ruled the day. My plans are simple. I'll maintain the status quo. I don't see any new tables in the near future. I'm still adjusting to sitting alone and relying on my memories to keep me company. The biggest challenge is the silence. I celebrate the fact that David, Elizabeth, and Michael have tables of their own. They move them from place to place, with more moves and seating arrangements on the horizon. But they are theirs with conversations of their own. I think Ruth and I provided a good model for each to adapt as they see fit. And that makes me smile.